Chapter 31. 5 years later, I have lighted upon this old diary, which it has interested me to look over, containing, as it does, records of the time when life shone more warmly in my eye than it does now. I am impelled to add one sentence to round off its record of the past. About a year ago, my sister Caroline, after a persistent wooing, accepted the hand and heart of Theophilus Higham, once the blushing young scripture reader who assisted at the substitute for a marriage I planned, and now the fully ordained curate of the next parish. His penitence for the part he played ended in love. We have all now made atonement for our sins against her. May she be deceived no more. 1887. The grave by the hand post. I never pass through Chalk Newton without turning to regard the neighboring upland, at a point where a lane crosses the lone straight highway dividing this from the next parish, a sight which does not fail to recall the event that once happened there, and, though it may seem superfluous, at this date, to disinter more memories of village history, the whispers of that spot may claim to be preserved. It was on a dark, yet mild and exceptionally dry evening at Christmas time, according to the testimony of William Dewey of Mellstock, Michael Mayle, and others, that the choir of Chalk Newton, a large parish situate about halfway between the towns of Ivell and Casterbridge, and now a railway station, left their homes just before midnight, to repeat their annual harmonies under the windows of the local population. The band of instrumentalists and singers was one of the largest in the county, and, unlike the smaller and finer Mellstock string band, which eschewed all but the catgut, it included brass and reed performers at full Sunday services, and reached all across the West Gallery. On this night there were two or three violins, two cellos, a tenor viol, double bass, hautboy, clarionets, serpent, and seven singers. It was, however, not the choir's labors, but what its members chanced to witness, that particularly marked the occasion. They had pursued their rounds for many years without meeting with any incident of an unusual kind, but tonight, according to the assertions of several, there prevailed, to begin with, an exceptionally solemn and thoughtful mood among two or three of the oldest in the band, as if they were thinking they might be joined by the phantoms of dead friends who had been of their number in earlier years, and now were mute in the churchyard under flattening mounds, friends who had shown greater zest for melody in their time than was shown in this, or that some past voice of a semi-transparent figure might quaver from some bedroom window its acknowledgement of their nocturnal greeting, instead of a familiar living neighbor. Whether this were fact or fancy, the younger members of the choir met together with their customary thoughtlessness and buoyancy. When they had gathered by the stone stump of the cross in the middle of the village, near the White Horse Inn, which they made their starting point, someone observed that they were full early, that it was not yet 12 o'clock. The local waits of those days mostly refrained from sounding a note before Christmas morning had astronomically arrived, and not caring to return to their beer, they decided to begin with some outlying cottages in Sidlinch Lane, where the people had no clocks, and would not know whether it were night or morning. In that direction they accordingly went, and as they ascended to higher ground their attention was attracted by a light beyond the houses, quite at the top of the lane. The road from Chalk Newton to Broad Sidlinch is about 2 miles long, and in the middle of its course, where it passes over the ridge dividing the two villages, it crosses at right angles, as has been stated, the lonely monotonous old highway known as Long Ash Lane, which runs, straight as a surveyor's line, many miles north and south of this spot, on the foundation of a Roman road, and has often been mentioned in these narratives. Though now quite deserted and grass-grown, at the beginning of the century it was well kept and frequented by traffic. The glimmering light appeared to come from the precise point where the roads intersected. I think I know what that mid mean. ? One of the group remarked. They stood a few moments, discussing the probability of the light having origin in an event of which rumors had reached them, and resolved to go up the hill. Approaching the high land, their conjectures were strengthened. Long ash lane cut athwart them, right and left, and they saw that at the junction of the four ways, under the hand post, a grave was dug, into which, as the choir drew nigh, a corpse had just been thrown by the four Sidlinch men employed for the purpose. The cart and horse which had brought the body thither stood silently by. The singers and musicians from Chalk Newton halted, and looked on while the gravediggers shoveled in and trod down the earth, till, the hole being filled, the latter threw their spades into the cart, and prepared to depart. Who mid ye be a burying there? Asked Lot Swanhills in a raised voice. Not the sergeant? The Sidlinch men had been so deeply engrossed in their task that they had not noticed the lanterns of the Chalk Newton choir till now. What be you the Newton carol singers? Returned the representatives of Sidlinch. Eh, sure. Can it be that it is old Sergeant Holway you've a buried there? Tis so. You've heard about it, then? The choir knew, no particulars, only that he had shot himself in his apple closet on the previous Sunday. Nobody seems to know what it did it for, I believe. Leastwise, we don't know a Chalk Newton, continued Lot. Oh yes. It all came out at the inquest. The singers drew close, and the Sidlinch men, pausing to rest after their labors, told the story. It was all owing to that son of his, poor old man. It broke his heart. But the son is a soldier, surely, now with his regiment in the East Indies? And it have been rough with the army over there lately. 'Twas a pity his father persuaded him to go. But Luke shouldn't have twitted the sergeant out, since I did it for the best. The circumstances, in brief, were these. The sergeant who had come to this lamentable end, father of the young soldier who had gone with his regiment to the East, had been singularly comfortable in his military experiences, these having ended long before the outbreak of the Great War with France. On his discharge, after duly serving his time, he had returned to his native village, and married, and taken kindly to domestic life. But the war in which England next involved herself had cost him many frettings, that age and infirmity prevented him from being ever again an active unit of the army. When his only son grew to young manhood, and the question arose of his going out in life, the lad expressed his wish to be a mechanic. But his father advised enthusiastically for the army. Trade is coming to nothing in these days, he said. And if the war with the French lasts, as it will, trade will be still worse. The army, Luke, that's the thing for ye. 'Twas the making of me, and 'twill be the making of you. I hadn't half such a chance as you'll have in these splendid hotter times. Luke demurred, for he was a home-keeping, peace-loving youth. But, putting respectful trust in his father's judgment, he at length gave way, and enlisted in the D-Foot. In the course of a few weeks he was sent out to India to his regiment, which had distinguished itself in the East under General Wellesley. But Luke was unlucky. News came home indirectly that he lay sick out there, and then on one recent day, when his father was out walking, the old man had received tidings that a letter awaited him at Casterbridge. The sergeant sent a special messenger the whole 9 miles, and the letter was paid for and brought home. But though, as he had guessed, it came from Luke, its contents were of an unexpected tenor. The letter had been written during a time of deep depression. Luke said that his life was a burden and a slavery, and bitterly reproached his father for advising him to embark on a career for which he felt unsuited. He found himself suffering fatigues and illnesses without gaining glory, and engaged in a cause which he did not understand or appreciate. If it had not been for his father's bad advice, he, Luke, would now have been working comfortably at a trade in the village that he had never wished to leave. After reading the letter, the sergeant advanced a few steps till he was quite out of sight of everybody, and then sat down on the bank by the wayside. When he arose half an hour later, he looked withered and broken, and from that day his natural spirits left him. Wounded to the quick by his son's sarcastic stings, he indulged in liquor more and more frequently. His wife had died some years before this date, and the sergeant lived alone in the house which had been hers. One morning in the December, under notice, the report of a gun had been heard on his premises, and on entering, the neighbors found him in a dying state. He had shot himself with an old firelock that he used for scaring birds, and from what he had said the day before, and the arrangements he had made for his decease, there was no doubt that his end had been deliberately planned, as a consequence of the despondency into which he had been thrown by his son's letter. The coroner's jury returned a verdict of felo-de-se. "Here's his son's letter," apostrophe said one of the Sidlinch men. "'Twas found in his father's pocket. You can see by the state odd how many times he read it over. Howsomever, the Lord's will be done, since it must, whether or no. ' The grave was filled up and leveled, no mound being shaped over it. The Sidlinch men then bade the Chalk Newton choir good night, and departed with the cart in which they had brought the sergeant's body to the hill. When their tread had died away from the ear, and the wind swept over the isolated grave with its customary siffle of indifference, Lot Swanhills turned, and spoke to old Richard Toller, the hautboy player. "'Tis hard upon a man, and he a wold soldier, to serve and so, Richard." Not that the sergeant was ever in a battle bigger than would go into a half-acre paddock, that's true. Still, his soul ought to have as good a chance as another man's, all the same, eh? ' Richard replied that he was quite of the same opinion. What do you say to lifting up a carol over his grave, as 'tis Christmas, and no hurry to begin down in parish, and 'twould take up 10 minutes, and not a soul up here to say us nay, or know anything about it? ' Lot nodded assent. The man ought to pay his chances, he repeated. Ye may as well spit upon his grave, for all the good we shall do and by what we lift up. Now he's got so far, said Naughton, the clarionet man and professed skeptic of the choir. But I'm agreed, if the rest be. ' They thereupon placed themselves in a semicircle by the newly stirred earth, and roused the dull air with the well-known number 16 of their collection, which Lot gave out as being the one he thought best suited to the occasion, and the mood, "He comes the price owners to release, and Satan's bondage held." "Down that we've never played to a dead man afore," said Ezra Catstock, when, having concluded the last verse, they stood reflecting for a breath or two. "But it do seem more merciful than to go away and leave en, as they t'other fellers have done. Now back along to Newton, and by the time we get over right the passants 'twill be half after 12, said the leader. They had not, however, done more than gather up their instruments, when the wind brought to their notice the noise of a vehicle rapidly driven up the same lane from Sidlinch which the gravediggers had lately retraced. To avoid being run over when moving on, they waited till the benighted traveler, whoever he might be, should pass them where they stood in the wider area of the cross. In half a minute the light of the lanterns fell upon a hired fly, drawn by a steaming and jaded horse. It reached the hand post, when a voice from the inside cried, "Stop here!" The driver pulled rein. The carriage door was opened from within, and there leapt out a private soldier in the uniform of some line regiment. He looked around, and was apparently surprised to see the musicians standing there. "Have you buried a man here?" he asked. "No. We bain't Sidlinch folk, thank God. We be Newton Choir. Though a man is just buried here, that's true, and we've raised a carol over the poor mortal's anatomy. What do my eyes see before me young Luke Holway, that went by his regiment to the East Indies, or do I see his spirit straight from the battlefield? Be you the son, that wrote the letter apostrophe. Don't ask me. The funeral is over, then? Apostrophe, there were no funeral, in a Christian manner of speaking. But buried, sure enough. You must have met the men going back in the empty cart. Apostrophe, apostrophe, like a dog in a ditch, and all through me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he remained silent, looking at the grave, and they could not help pitying him. My friends, apostrophe, he said, I understand better now. You have, I suppose, in neighborly charity, sung peace to his soul? I thank you, from my heart, for your kind pity. Yes, I am Sergeant Always Miserable Son. I'm the son who has brought about his father's death, as truly as if I had done it with my own hand. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, no. Don't ye take on so, young man. He'd been naturally low for a good while, off and on, so we hear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we were out in the east, when I wrote to him. Everything that seemed to go wrong with me. Just after my letter had gone, we were ordered home. That's how it is you see me here. As soon as we got into barracks at Casterbridge, I heard Otis. Dot, damn me. I'll dare to follow my father, and make away with myself too. It is the only thing left to do. Apostrophe, apostrophe, don't ye be rash, Luke Holway, I say again, but try to make amends by your future life. And maybe your father will smile a smile down from heaven upon ye for t apostrophe, apostrophe, he shook his head. I don't know about that. Apostrophe, he answered bitterly. Try and be worthy of your father at his best. Tis not too late. Apostrophe, do you think not? I fancy it is. Well, I'll turn it over. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.